Because he said, if I really had love for you, how could I stand to be away from you? I gave up your company, but you did not give me up. By your merciful rope, you have bound me by the neck and brought me back again to your lotus feet. Muni toma chadila, tumi mori na chadila. Kripa pasha gali bhandi charane anila. So, this is the nature of any spiritual personality, that even sometimes disciples, they'll leave guru. But the guru will never forget them and always be thinking of them and praying to the Lord for their benefit. And then sometimes they come back. So that's why Sri Damodar says, I gave up your company, but you did not give me up. Like Srila Prabhupada, sometimes disciples would leave him and they would be in Maya, or they'd go away. And Prabhupada would ask. He mentioned to Achyutananda, because someone had gone, and Prabhupada said, you know, where is so-and-so? Have you heard anything from so-and-so? He said, I am crying for him. And Prabhupada said, I'm crying to Krishna, I'm crying in separation from him. I'm feeling very much his separation. And actually, and then he wrote one letter. One devotee had left, so Prabhupada found his home address, and he wrote him a very wonderful letter. It's in the letters book. He said, I'm feeling very much your separation. And I know that sometimes due to bad habits we become prey to Maya. But please don't give up Krishna consciousness. I am waiting for you. And I'm very eager for you to return. Please come as soon as possible. A very, very nice letter. And I remember seeing that letter and I was thinking of, you know, some of our students that have gone. And I just thought, wow, what beautiful compassion, what intense love Prabhupada has for his shishya. He says, I'm always thinking of you. So Prabhupada wrote to them at their house. They were home, living at home, and had given up Krishna consciousness. And just see the love and care. We may forget the guru or give up the guru, but the guru will never forget us and give us up. So Damodar then worshipped the lotus feet of Nityananda Prabhu, and Nityananda in turn embraced him in the ecstasy of love. After worshipping Nityananda, Sri Damodar met Jagannanda, Mukunda, Shankara, and Sarvabhauma. Sri Damodar also offered his worshipful prayers to the lotus feet of Paramananda Puri, who in turn embraced him in ecstatic love. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave Sri Damodar residence in a solitary place and ordered one servant to serve him with a supply of water and other necessities. So this is interesting. It says, Mahaprabhu Dilatanre Nibritte Vasagar. Nibritta means solitary. Nibritte Vasagar. A place to reside, a kutir. So this is for bhajan. It's mentioned that one should live alone. It's best to live alone for bhajan. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that the biggest problem, although there's great advantage of sadhu sangha, tremendous advantage. In fact, all advantage can be had at the lotus feet of true sadhus. You can attain all perfection by associating with true sadhus. That's the most powerful blessing that we can attain by the mercy of great devotees. However, Bhaktivinoda Thakur warns that there's a danger also, that when one mixes in the assembly of Vaishnavas, that there's the danger is that you may die. You can grow and thrive in the sadhu sangha, and thrive and grow like anything by very advanced sadhu sangha. At the same time, you may kill yourself if you make aparad. He said the danger in associating with Vaishnavas is you may make Vaishnava aparad, sadhu ninda. And this is the most grievous offense against bhakti. And your para bhakti, or your shadow of devotion, your shadow attachment to Krishna, can be completely nullified and annihilated by that Vaishnava aparad. Because we may attain some shadow of attachment, reflection, a shadow, you know, the shadow. There's the object and then the shadow, chaya. So the chaya has no substance. It depends on the existence of the object to have its reality. So by associating with advanced devotees and being with them, we reflect as a shadow their bhakti or their attachment for Krishna. But the real substance is them and not us. We are just a shadow. That's parabhakti, it's reflected. But by continuing to associate with them, that shadow will become substance. That shadow will take form, three-dimensional form. It'll actually have substance by their mercy. But if we mix with them and we make Vaishnava Parad, then that shadow will disappear. But sometimes the substance is always there, the object is always there. But depending on the angle of light, sometimes there's shadow and sometimes there's not. In bright sun, you may not find any shadow. In a full sunshine. So if you offend a Vaishnava, then your shadow is non-existent. You lose your shadow of devotion, your shadow of bhakti, shadow of attachment. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, to prevent this serious danger, if you have a tendency to be a fault finder, some people by nature, they possess an evil eye. Due to their birth, due to their papa karma from last life, they look at the world with a kind of cross eye. You know, they kind of look, they're always like examining everyone, like, you know, hey, you have a spot on your sari. Hey, what, you know, your watch is no good. Or, hey, you know, they're always looking for the fault. You know, like Jesus said, you're trying to find, what is it? You try to find splinters in others, and you have a log in your eye. Yeah, a log or something. Yeah, you're trying to find a splinter or a little pin, you know, splinter piece tiny in someone else's character. But you look at in your own eye, you have a huge tree, a huge log in your own eye. It's like the story that one time there were two people together, and one was this kind of fault finding, had this fault finding characteristic, and so he said to one person's name was Mr. Sieve. How do you say sieve? You know, sieve like for filtering water, has a bunch of holes in it. Yeah, you know? Tell in Hindi. You know, you want to wash something, a flour or some rice, you put it in and go like that and all the water goes out. Siv. So one was Mr. Siv. And the other was Mr. Needle. You know Needle?
Needle.
Know Needle? Understand? So, Mr. Siv, he was like this kind of fault-finding person, always seen. He said, hey, Mr. Needle, look, you got a hole in your back, man. Says you got a hole in your back, you're just like, you're worthless, you know, you have a big hole in your back. And then Mr. Needle, he was a little humble type, and he wasn't so fault-finding. He said, what are you talking about me? I have one little hole in my back, and but otherwise my body is very nice. My body is very straight and it's nice and good shape and looking nice. I just have one hole. But you're Mr. Siv, you got thousands of holes. So why are you criticizing me for my one hole when you've got thousands of them yourself? So why are you trying to find fault in me when you're an ocean of faults yourself? You must be an ocean of faults because this is Kali Yuga. In the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, it is certified what is the position of Kali Yuga. Shuka Muni explains that the horrible, terrible condition of Kali Yuga, Kaler Doshan Idhe Rajan, Asti Eka Mahavanam. He says, Kaler Doshan Idhe Rajan. Hey Rajan, hey King Prikshit. This Kali Yuga, Kaler means Kali Yuga, is a Dosha Nidhe, Dosha Samudra, Dosha Sindhu. It is an ocean of faults, dosha, problems, difficulties, faults, fault-finding, pin-picking and pin-pricking, whatever you call it. And then, but then he says, Kaler Dosha Nidhe Rajan, Asti Eka Mahavanan, Kirtanat Eva Krishnasya, Mukta Sangha Param Vrajat. He says, there's one good thing. Everything is full of faults. People are full of faults, the environment's full of faults, I'm full of faults, you're full of faults, you find faults in me, I find faults in you, that's Kali Yuga. So fault finding is very easy in Kali Yuga. But there's one good thing. By Krishna Kirtan, you can attain mukti. You can attain the supreme destination, the spiritual world, just by this one good thing. This fault, it's fault-free. Has no faults, there's no impurity, it's nitya mukta purna shuddho. Nitya mukta purna shuddho. The holy name of the Lord is completely liberated, completely pure, purna shuddho, totally pure, there are no faults in it. Any way, anyhow you chant it, you'll get some benefit. So, we shouldn't be like the Mr. Siv. let's see. So the point is, we're making that, Bhaktivinoda says that it's best. Just as Lord Chaitanya allocated a solitary kutir for Saurabh Damodar to do his bhajan, although they would come together for kirtan, come together for sangha, and they would all go to Chota Gopinath Mandir in the afternoon and hear Gadadhar Pandit speak on Bhagavatam, And they would all go to Jagannath Temple in the morning. They would all meet Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Temple in the morning. And they would take darshan of Lord Chaitanya, and they had big kirtan, and then they would go outside and circumambulate the temple of Lord Jagannath four times with a big kirtan. Spend 2 or 3 hours in the morning just taking darshan and drinking the sweet nectar of Jagannath, Rajendranandan and Krishna's face. And then Lord Chaitanya, then the devotees would disperse. It would be around noontime. All the devotees would disperse and go to their kutirs and prepare their bhog or do their madhukari. And then Lord Chaitanya would go and visit Haridas Thakur at his kutir at Siddhabokul. He had his own kutir over there. And then he would go from there, he would go to the ocean and take his snan in the ocean. Then he would do his anik, his gayatri. No, excuse me. I don't know if he was doing his gayatri. He said he was doing his noon duties, whatever that was, because he's a sannyasi and Paramahamsa. And I don't know if they do, at that level they do gayatri. But he was doing some noon duties. Can't be sure exactly what. Because when it is in that line, it says when he took sannyas, he gave up his sika, you know, because he took sannyas from Keshav Bharati, Mayavadi, Keshav Bharati. So he gave up his sika and the Brahman thread. This is Paramahamsa. It was like the six Goswamis, they were Paramahamsas. But he was carrying a danda. So he carried a danda. Then Nityananda, on the way once to Puri, Nityananda said, what, you know, Lord Chaitanya, he said, here, hold this danda for me. Hold my tree danda. So then he went ahead. So Lord Nityananda said, what? The Lord, he's a Paramahamsa sannyasi. There's four stages of sannyas. There's four levels of sannyas. So one is the Kutichak, then Bahudak, and then Paribrajak, and Paramahamsa. So Paramahamsa is totally free. He's Hamsa. He's free from all designations. No upadis, no designations. He's totally... So the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were Paramahamsa sannyasis. So a Paramahamsa sannyasi usually takes the Safed Vesh, the white Vesh, the short white like Lungi or Gamsha and Chadar and Kanta, some patchwork quilt blanket. So he said, this Lord Chaitanya, he's a topmost sannyasi, he's a Paramahamsa Shiromani, he's a crest jewel of all the Paramahamsa sannyasis. Well, what? And of course also Paramahamsas, they don't usually carry danda anymore. They don't carry danda. So then he says, he doesn't need this. So he just broke it. He broke it in three pieces and threw it in the river. And Lord Chaitanya, he met up with Lord Chaitanya later. He said, where's my danda? He said, I broke it and threw it away. You don't need that thing. So this is the position. So if we can get an arrangement where we have our own place to do bhajan, it's very, very nice. We, in Vrindavan, we have a small kutir where we stay. But then we go to the temple and we associate with the devotees and hear the Bhagavatam class from the devotees and go to kirtan and mangalarti, all these things. But this is very nice. But to have one solitary place or bhajan room or temple room in the house, some fixed place should be there to properly progress in spiritual life. So the Lord wants this. Lord Chaitanya arranges this for his devotees. So we pray to Lord Chaitanya, you're very merciful. Please make arrangements for me to have some place for my bhajan. The next day, Mahaprabhu sat with all the devotees, headed by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and they discussed the pastimes of Krishna. Aradina Sarvabhauma Aribhakta Sange Vasaya Achina Maha Prabhu Krishna Kata Arange. Krishna Kata Arange. Range means to play. Ranga means to play. It means pleasure. It means to be engaged in. They were Krishna Kata Arange. They were relishing and enjoying the pastimes, Krishna Katha, pastimes of Krishna. All the bhaktas were sitting together with Lord Chaitanya. So this is what bhaktas do all over the world. Bhaktas sit together and they relish the pastimes of Krishna. A few moments ago we were talking about pastimes of Krishna from the Bhagavatam, Mahishi Gita. So this is the nectarine of life. When Prabhupada was going on the Jaladuta, he suffered two heart attacks. And he, at that time, he wrote in his diary, he said, I am reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I am getting great relish. And this Chaitanya Charitamrita is sustaining my life. It is a nectarine. It is a nectarine of life. So these sweet topics of Lord Chaitanya, they are just like nectar for the liberated souls, like Srila Prabhupada. And for the conditioned souls, like ourselves, the topics of Lord Chaitanya are great medicine for us. They are great medicine to purify us of the material disease of attachment, this body, The material disease is basically summed up in two words. What are the two words? The two words are aham mameti. Aham mameti. These two words, aham mameti. Aham means I am. So material existence, aham means I am this body. I am this body, and mameti means mine. And these are my relatives, this is my house, this is my wife, and all of these things are mine. All these things, this is my car, and my watch, and my house, and my book, and my tape player, and they're all for my enjoyment, for my pleasure. Aham mameti. So, by hearing the topics of Lord Chaitanya, these two words are removed. This tendency for aham mameti becomes destroyed by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. We don't identify as aham mameti, we identify as aham brahmasmi. I am Brahman. I am spiritual. I am consciousness. I have a unique spiritual sarup, spiritual form. And I am part and parcel of the Supreme Lord Krishna. And I have an eternal service to Him, an eternal loving relationship with Him. So this type of reality becomes revealed in the consciousness of a sadhaka who receives the mercy of Guru and Gauranga, principally through the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, and the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. The bhajans are written by loving devotees who are actually pouring their love out in the form of this bhajan, which is poetry, to glorify Radha and Krishna and glorify Lord Chaitanya, and they want to share that love with us. So if you want to drink from the heart of the Vaishnava, if you want to drink the nectar from the heart of the Vaishnava, then you sing their bhajans. Because they're taking the bhajan, they take their heart and they turn it upside down and they put it in a cup. They empty all the prema out of their heart and they put it in a cup and they serve it out to you in the form of their bhajan. Narottam Das Prarthana, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gita Mala, all these different songs. So they're like, the bhajan is like a cup full of the sweet nectar from the hearts of the Vaishnavas. So when you sing that, you get to drink. You get to drink some of the nectar from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das, Govinda Das Kaviraj, etc. So we want to drink that. We want to drink that. The great rasa. At that time, Govinda appeared on the scene, offered his respectful obeisances, and spoke submissively. So the scene is 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya is sitting in Puri, and different people are appearing time to time. They're arriving in Puri. Different eternal associates of Lord Chaitanya are joining him. So now, as you can say, if this was a drama, you could say, enter stage right. Enter, you know, here everyone's on the stage, and all of a sudden, Govinda walks down the stage, and everyone looks at him, oh, who's this? Like, just as someone new walked in here, everyone said, oh, who is this? He said, oh, I am Govinda. I've been sent here by Gopal Krishna Maharaj to, you know, this and that. So then, no one knows who this is. This new person has arrived. So then he identifies himself. I am a servant of Ishwarapuri. My name is Govinda. And following the orders of my spiritual master, I have come here. So it's interesting that when he identifies himself, he says, Ishwara Purira Britya Govinda Mora Naam Puri Gosai Agyai Ainu Tamara Sthan. When he first identifies himself, he identifies himself in relationship by Sambandha. In other words, Sambandha means his relationship. So his relationship is guru, is shishya to a guru. So he identifies himself as, I belong to Ishwarapuri. I'm a Britya. Britya means servant. There's one shloka that says, Ekali Ishwara Krishna Arasabhya Britya. Krishna, Ekali Ishwara Krishna. Krishna is the supreme controller, and everyone else is a Britya, or servant. There's only, Krishna is the supreme controller. So he's saying the same thing, Ishwarapuri Britya. I am a servant. Just like in India, oftentimes the person identifies himself as the son of so-and-so, S-O. And in West, they don't do this so much. They say, who are you? And you say, I'm Mr. Smith. But in India, they say, who are you? And you say, oh, I am the son of Mr. so-and-so, I am so-and-so. Right? Isn't it first? It's kind of like father's identity is important. In other words, your sambandha, your relationship with your father, father to son, is important. So the same thing. Father is like superior. He's like guru in one sense. So you identify, oh, I am the son of so-and-so. Oh, what's your name? Well, my name is this. So this is the etiquette but especially you can see that he presents first his fortune of being of his guru. I am the servant of Ishwarapuri. My name is Govinda, and I have an order for my guru to come here. Just before my guru left this world to attain the highest perfection, he told me I should go to Mahaprabhu and render service to him. Another god brother named Kashishwar will also come here after visiting the holy places. However, following the orders of my spiritual master, I have hastily come to be present at your lotus feet. Mahaprabhu replied, my spiritual master Ishwarapuri always favors me with paternal affection. Therefore, out of his causeless mercy, he has sent you here. So the Kashishwara and this person named Govinda, they are disciples of Ishwarapuri. And Lord Chaitanya is also a disciple of Ishwarapuri. So that means that they are his brothers. They're guru bhais, they're brothers. So the father, the guru is the father, he has sent his sons to serve another son. The junior is to serve the senior. After hearing this, Sarvabhauma asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why did Ishwarapuri keep a servant who comes from a Shudra family? And then Mahaprabhu said, both the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the spiritual master Ishwarapuri are completely independent. Therefore, the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Ishwarapuri is not subject to any Vedic rules and regulations. The mercy of Krishna is not restricted to the jurisdiction of caste and creed. Vidura was a Shudra, yet Krishna took lunch at his home. That pastime took place here in Hastinapur. You know that pastime? Duryodhan invited Krishna to come for lunch. Duryodhan, of course, had a wonderful palace in Indraprastha, big king. So it was a king's lunch, a king for a king. So Krishna was a big king. In this particular side, and he was being invited for lunch by Duryodhan. So he was on his way, but then he was thinking, he accepted the invitation, so elaborate arrangements were made by Duryodhan, a big kingly feast, 56 preparations, 150, who knows how many preparations were made, all gold plates and elaborate crystal dining tables and everything. So then on the way to Duryodhan's palace, Krishna was thinking, actually, I accepted the invitation out of courtesy, but this Duryodhan, he is an offender to my devotees. He has offended Draupadi, and he has offended the Pandavas, and anyone who is an offender to my devotees, I cannot go there. So then he changed his mind in midstream, and he told Daruka, he told his chariot driver, I think near here is Vidura's house. Madhura had a very small house. He said, go there. Take my chariot there. But my lord, you have an appointment with Duryodhan for lunch. Forget about it. So they went to Vidura's house. And Vidura, they came to the door, and Vidura was astounded because he had no pre awareness of the visit of the lord. And he fell on the ground. He was crying, oh my lord, you come to my house. I feel so ashamed and embarrassed. I have with this. And he came in the house, and then his wife was there. And they were very, very poor. And when she saw her beloved Lord, Krishna, enter her house, she started crying. She said, oh, my Lord, Govinda Madhava Dhamma, Govinda Dhamma Dara Madhaveti. She also said this, there's a shloka, there's a long song, it has like 60, 70 shlokas. Govinda Dhamma Dara Madhaveti. And then in her ecstasy, she wanted to offer, because her heart was jumping out of her body, she wanted to just give herself and throw herself at the feet of her beloved Lord, Krishna. She was so grateful and so happy that he'd come to her house. So she didn't know, she wanted to just take the heart, she wanted to just take her heart out and just offer it to Krishna, just give it to him. But that's not possible, and they couldn't do that. But her feeling was like that. So she just looked around, and there was nothing. There was nothing to give the Lord to express her love, except she saw, oh, there's a banana. So she took some bananas, some kala, and she peeled it, and she threw away the banana, and she gave the peel to Krishna. In her ecstasy of love and the ecstasy of the serve Krishna, she was so overwhelmed by her pure love for Krishna and pure service mood that she quickly said, here, take this banana. And she offered with pure love, and Krishna took the peel and he ate the peel. And she threw away the banana. So this is one nice pastime. that took place. So this shows that the Lord is not controlled by rules and regulations. So Ishvara Puri, although he was a Brahmin and he was a guru and acharya, he kept as his servant, this Govinda was serving him, and Govinda came from a Shudra background. But the Lord and his devotees were not bound by the rules and regulations. And Lord Chaitanya goes on to explain, Krishna's mercy is dependent only on affection. Sneha lesha peksha matra Sri Krishna kripar Sneha vash jahana kari Swatantra achar. Sneha, affection. Lesha, a little bit, tiny bit, a trace, a peksha, depending on, matra only. Sri Krishna kripa, the mercy of Krishna. Sneha vasha hanakare swantantra achar. Krishna's mercy is dependent only on affection. Being obliged only by affection, Krishna acts very independently. Swatantra achar is independent. Swatantra achar. So Krishna is dependent on affection. Sneha means the downward. Sneha means like liquid that flows down. So affection flows down. That's why they often say the youngest child in the family gets all the sneha. The affection, the love of the mother and father and the grandparents, everyone, and even the people in the other children in the family, it all flows down to the youngest child. So that's called sneha, the downward flow of affection. So Krishna's affection flows down. It flows from his heart down, even to the lowest common denominator, like water. You know, water will seek its own level. So Krishna's love, his mercy extends anywhere where there's affection. Just like Vidura was a sutra, so Krishna's way, you know, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's a Parabrahman. He's a Supreme Brahman. Yet he goes, because there was so much love and affection in that sutra, Vidura and his wife, that he was attracted to go over there. Let's explain that. Sneha lesha peksha. If someone has a trace, sneha lesha, has a trace of pure love or affection for Krishna, they will receive the Sri Krishna Kripa. They will receive the mercy of Krishna. See, Duryodhana, he didn't have a trace, he didn't have a lesha of affection for Krishna. He wanted to finish him off. He wanted to finish the Pandavas and finish anybody to do with the Pandavas and even finish his own father and take over the rule. And he was so evil-minded. Didn't care anything for the advice of his friends or father or anything. So he didn't have this, but this. So Krishna acts. Krishna's mercy does not depend on mundane rules and regulations. He's dependent only on affection and nothing else. Service to the Lord can be rendered in two ways. One can serve the Lord in affection or in veneration. When service is rendered in affection, it is the Lord's special mercy. When service is rendered in veneration, it is doubtful whether Krishna's mercy is actually involved. This is actually talking about the two types of sadhana bhakti. It's talking about Vaidhi sadhana bhakti, which is offered out of which you worship Krishna or you serve Krishna motivated by fear. Your motivation is you're afraid that if you don't serve the Lord, you'll be punished. You're following the yama and niyama. Oh, if I don't follow the rules, if I don't do this, if I don't do that, I'll be punished, or I'll go to hell, or I'll get this sinful reaction. So that's veneration. Great veneration, awe, reverence, respect, distance. And so that's that veneration and that fear, it's mixed with fearfulness, because that person doesn't actually have genuine affection. Affection means rag. Rag means attachment or affection, or rati for the Lord. So he operates out of fear, but the other person who's on a level of raganuga sadhana, he actually has awakened by Guru Kripa and Krishna Kripa, he's awakened real affection for the Lord. So his motivation to serve is he loves the Lord, he wants to please the Lord, he wants to go see the Lord in the morning. He's not like, oh, if I don't go to Mangalartik, I won't get breakfast. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm afraid. They said if you don't go to Mangalartik, you don't get breakfast, you don't get any prasadam. I'm afraid, I better go. The other devotee thinks, oh, I want to see my Lord. I don't care about breakfast or not breakfast or no breakfast. And I want to see him. And then another day, a Mangalartik may come and he's chanting his japa, and he's seeing his Lord in his japa. And then he doesn't go to Mangalartik. And, oh, you didn't go to Mangalartik. You don't get breakfast. Okay, no problem, Hare Krishna. But he stayed in his room and he was chanting japa, and he was seeing the Lord, and he was having darshan of the Lord in his japa. So he's not motivated by fear. He's serving the Lord out of affection, out of real affection and attachment. So Krishna, service to Krishna can be rendered in two ways. It's called sadhana. Two forms of sadhana. It is doubtful whether Krishna's mercy is actually involved. So it says, when service is rendered to Krishna in affection, and this is his Raghunuga Bhakti, that is the Lord's special mercy. But when service is rendered out of rules and regulations and vaidhi sadhana, it is doubtful whether Krishna's mercy is actually involved. If Krishna's mercy is there, it is not dependent on any caste or creed. Mahaprabhu wanted to inform Sarvabhauma, who asked the question, that Krishna is the spiritual master of everyone, and Krishna does not care for mundane caste or creed. Therefore, Mahaprabhu cited the example of Krishna's accepting food at the house of Vidura, who is a Shudra by birth. In the same token, Ishwarpuri, being an empowered spiritual master, could show mercy to anyone. Therefore, he accepted Govinda, although he was only a boy who was born in a Shudra family. He accepted him as his disciple, and he trained him to become a Brahmin and became the personal servant of Ishwarpuri. So after he was trained and samskaras were done and he became purified, then he was given diksha. So he was born in Sudra Janam, but by guna and karma, by quality and by actions, he was transformed into a Brahmana and given diksha, and then appointed as the personal servant of the spiritual master. That's all by the power of the guru. In Hari Bhakti Vilas, Sanatana Goswami states that if one is initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, he immediately becomes a brahmana. A pseudo or false spiritual master cannot transform a person into a brahmana, but an authorized spiritual master can do so. Actually, in the Dharma Shastras, there's 20 different Dharma Shastras. Specifically, they're called Dharma Shastras. They're like Upavedas. They're not the major Smritis or Shrutis, but they're called the Dharma Shastras. Manu Samhita is one Dharma Shastra, for example. So in there, they give the codes and the laws for the Varnashram Dharma, for the four Varnas and the four Ashramas. So there's, when you enter into Ashram life, like Brahmacharya Ashram, there are particular yamas and niyamas, rules and regulations, do's and don'ts. And you follow those, and then you're brahmachari. Then grihastha, there's particular rules. One of the main functions of grihastha ashram is to purify their accumulation of wealth, because grihasthas are the only division of society that has money. They have to give charity. That's by shastras. They give charity because business means lying in black and white, and this is business. And we become attached. Money makes us very greedy, and we become very attached to this money. Because Kali personified resides in money. You know, all the vices and bad qualities, kam, krodh, lobh, moha, matsarya, mada, they're all inside of money. Originally it was inside of gold. Because when Kali, the personification of Kali Yuga, was a black man, he was trying to cut the leg from the cow. It's in Bhagavatam. And Pariksha Maharaj appeared there and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And then he said, "You can't do this in my kingdom. You can't kill any cows in my kingdom as long as Pariksha is the emperor." So then Kali said, "Oh, please, I surrender to you. Don't kill me. Give me some place I can live." He said, "Yes, you can stay wherever gold is hoarded." Gold means paisa, rupees nowadays. It's all paper money. So wherever there's money, there's Kali. So Kali means all these bad qualities that I mentioned, kam, krodh, lobh. So therefore, that's one point. So the different ashramas, so grihasthas have to give charity to get free from the effects of that Kali. Now the vanapras, their duty, that's why it says vanapras, they're supposed to live in the van. They're supposed to actually leave their comfortable home. Traditionally, historically, they would actually, husband and wife together, they would go to the forest and live in forest. And so the rishis and sages would be living there, and sometimes they would provide dharmashalas for them. But thousands of years ago, husbands and wives performed, actually the vanaprastha ashram is meant for austerity. It's actually meant for tapa. Although generally we associate sannyasa ashram, the last ashram, with vairagya, because he's renounced. Sannyas. Sun means completely, and nyas means renunciation. So he's renounced, but it doesn't just mean that he's fasting and doing upavas or nirjali kadasi and all these things, which he may or may not do. But the main function of the sannyasi, of course, is detachment, total detachment from society, friendship, love, family, and wife, principally wife, but she's the center point or the pivot point of material attachment. And then, but he has a function, he has service, he has a duty he's supposed to teach. Of course, there's two types of sannyasis. One is Bhajananandi, one is Goshtyanandi. Bhajananandi, he just absorbs himself in his Nirjan Bhajan. He goes to Rishikesh, he goes to a gufa, to a cave, and he just does Bhajan, Nam Sankirtan, Dhyan, Smaran, and communicates with Paramatma or with Bhagavan, depending on his Ishtadev. So he's a Vairagi, but of that type. Now the other type of sannyasi is Goshtyanandi. Goshta means sounds, vibration. Goshta means, the word means sounds. So he goes and makes sounds. He goes and he gives prachar. He's preaching Bhagavad Saptaha, Bhagavad Gita, whatever. He does prachar. And maybe he gives a diksha and has shishya and so many things. He has a big family and a big ashram and all these things. So that's his main duty. So it's not so much, just like you see in the Puranas, in Padma Puran, there's that description of the Chaturmasya Vrata, Chaturmasya, which is coming up. So the 4 months of the rainy season. So that Vrata is a Vrata of austerity. You can't eat certain things and it's all these different things. That is specifically for Grihasthas, especially for Vanapras. They should do a very strict Chaturmasya Vrata. And there's so much Shruti fall that's given. When you observe Chaturmasya Vrata, you get so much fall. For example, one of the things it says in Padma Puran, if for the 4 months in the rainy season you don't eat any animal product, I mean you're a vegetarian, but you don't eat any animal products, means no cheese, no butter, no milk, no ghee, anything, for 4 months, then the Shruti follows you go to Goloka. Of course, you can see how difficult that would be in a place like North India, where people are so fond of rubbery and rasgulla and burpee and all these. 4 months, you know, because I also am very fond, but for 1 month, I observe the Kartik Vrata. A very strict Vrata during Kartik, which is one of the 4 months. And that's Radharani's month. She's known as Kartiki Devi. She's the presiding deity and presiding goddess of Kartik month. Kartik Mas is Radharani. So those that are worshipping Radha and Krishna, they're very keen on this Kartik Vrata. So therefore, so back to the Grihastha Ashram, Vanaprastha Ashram, one of the main functions that he has to perform is austerity. The way he performs austerity, because the center, we say the house is called the griha. So if the house is center, if the Krishna is the center of the house, it's called grihastha, grihastha ashram. It's actually ashram. Ashram means a place of shelter, ashraya, shelter, protection. So I'm in the house, I'm living with the personification of Maya. The woman is the personification of Maya for the man, and the man is the personification of Maya for the woman. So it's not that when we say Maya, it means women. Maya is women and Maya is men. It depends. Maya is illusion. Maya means Maya, that which is not, that which takes you from God, that which makes you forget reality, forget spirituality. That's Maya. It comes in many forms, but the totality or the compressed expression or the essence of Maya comes in this Manush Roop. So for the man, The woman represents the essence of Maya. So the greatest pleasure is found there. The greatest Maya is with a woman. And for a woman, the greatest Maya is with a man. So Maya means the illusory energy or this Maya Jagat. Maya, that which is not. That's the meaning of the word Maya. That we accept this body as real. That it's not real. It's not what you think it is. That which is not. This body is not real, but you think it's real. This body is not me, but I think it's me. So that's Maya. So we say to someone, you're in Maya. So this is Mahamaya. So therefore, I'm speaking about the principle of Grihastha Ashram. So when Krishna is placed in the center of the house, then the house revolves or turns around the service of Krishna, the pleasure of our household deity, our family deities, and we're always doing bhajans for him and we're chanting for him. And we may be producing children and everything that grihasthas do and working and having TV, but we're always remembering Thakurji, we're always making our offerings, and he's our shelter. He's our shelter. He's the source of our inspiration. It's not money that's the source of inspiration or man-woman contact, but it's Krishna. But I have my duty to my wife and husband. I show my affection. I love my children. I raise them. I protect them. But my heart of hearts is with Krishna. Just like if a man has a paramour, you know, second illicit lover, He's showing his wife, oh, my wife, you're so nice. Oh, you want a new sari? Here's a new sari. But his mind, in his heart, he's thinking, oh, when will I meet my paramour? So his heart has been, you know, caught by some other lover. And he's being very official with his wife and showing affection so she doesn't find out. Doesn't find out about this illicit connection on the side. So, in a similar way, we show affection for wife and husband and children and mother, father, relatives, and do our duty. But in our heart of hearts, we have a secret lover. We have a secret lover, a paramour, Radha and Krishna, or Vishnu or Ram, or whoever your Ishtadev is. And so, you know, and maybe we don't let that on. Maybe that's confidential. Maybe guyam, and maybe a secret. But in the family, it's like, so, but that becomes expressed by having a family deity. So now, if you don't have that situation, you don't have a family deity where everything is revolving about that, then you don't have grihastha life, you don't have grihastha ashram, but you have griha medhi. It's called griha medhi. The word medhi means like a pole. It means like a stick or a pole, a medhi. It means like middle point. So the center point, the griha medhi is like this. Like sometimes they take a lakri, a big pole, and they stick it in the ground. And they tie a bull to that pole. And they put grains there. And he walks around the pole. And he walks around. So Prabhupada explained it. When the sense gratification is the center, that's called griha medhi. You know, you please my senses. The man says, oh, my wife, you please me. I'll please you. So the center of that household is sense gratification. The body. My body and your body. The byproducts of our body, our children, and etc. So that's not an ashram. But that's not Krishna. So therefore, the grihastha is told, go away. Go away from that place. Go away from the house. Especially if it's griha medhi. If it's a griha medhi situation. When you enter the vanaprastha ashram, okay, first you have to, because house is the center of all sense gratification. But that's the location. And then, so you, in order to have a party, you need people and a place. You need two things to have a party. You need a place, and you need some friends. You can't say, well, let's have a party. Well, where? Inside the closet. No, you know, and 10 guys go in the closet, 10 ladies, you know, you can't have a party in there. It's just like there's no room. So you need proper room. So the house is the place for sense gratification. And then you need some people, so the husband and wife. So therefore, vanaprastha, they are told to go to the forest, leave that house. So that's, you know, half the party finished. Because there's no, you don't have any place anymore. You don't have any place, apartment or whatever. You're wandering the forest. And everyone's watching you, and you're out in the open, and there's no, you know, privacy. Of course, there's no privacy anyway, because in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, it talks about the 13 witnesses. There's 13 witnesses to every action. And one of them is the sandhyam, the tree sandhyam. One is the day. One is the light, the sunlight, the moon, the devatas, the rishis, the paramatma, Yamaraj. So, and the time junctures, the sandhyam. So how, when can you, wherever you are, it must be either day or night. So the night is also a witness. The day is a witness. The devatas are recording everything. Chandragupta, everyone says, oh, this is a dark secret place. I'll kill this person, steal his money. No one's watching. No one saw me. I escaped. But no, oh, the devata, Chandra's writing down, the night is writing down, and it's being noted, and you will get your reaction. Definitely. So, first thing in that, so austerity is required for vanaprastha, to give up that intense attachment to the house. First, learn how to leave attachment for that house. Nice couch, nice TV, you know, water bed, you know, remote control, this. Leave that place. Go live in a simple little ashram. Go to the, so then they go on, so modern days, instead of going to the forest, they go on tirthayatra. Vanaprastha means the austerity. Take your wife, no children, no grand, don't need little grandchildren, don't take your grandchildren. Because, you know, when you get older, then it's the grandchildren, all the sneha goes down to them. So you take your wife, and you take some simple clothes, and you go to, you know, Varanasi, Hardwar. Of course, we're Vaishnavas, so we want to go to Vaishnav Tirthasthans. Ayodhya, Dwarka, Vrindavan, how you behave. So the first day you get there, then you take snan, in Jamuna, Ganga, or holy snan to purify your samkarmas, and then but the first day you arrive in the holy dham, you're supposed to do upavas. You're supposed to go for 3 days and do upavas, fasting. And then the next day, after fasting, then you shave. You know, you shave your head. Like you see even ladies in Tirupati. You go to Tirupati, Venkateshwar, Balaji, and the ladies are shaving their head. It is long, long hair, beautiful hair, these South Indian ladies. They're going around bald with these skinny little heads, you know, and they really look funny. they give that they you know, samarpanam, they surrender, you know. So your second day is you shave your head, and then you take snan, and you take darshan, and then you give charity to Brahmins. You give some, you bring some money to the holy tirtha, and you give some charity to very saintly people and to, you know, temples. Then third day you finish your parikrama of other temples and you go back. Because it's told that the grihasthas, that they're just now entering vanaprastha ashram, they should not stay more than 3 days in the holy dham. Because if they do, and because they're with husband and wife, and their senses are so out of control, Adanta Gobir means uncontrolled senses. Adanta Gobir. Their senses are very strong, they're uncontrolled, then the man and woman may fall down. Because one of the principles is when you go to the, on the Tirtha Yatra, you leave your house, so you get Gar Tyag, you renounce your house. Then you also have to be Brahmachari. You have to be celibate, at least for those 3 days. That's why the Shastra says, don't stay more than 3 days, you rascal. Because after 3 days, you'll be saying, oh, wow, okay, we took a snan, shaved my head, I gave a donation, snan done, and now it's like, well, anyway, you're my wife, and the full moon is there, and, you know, Hare Krishna. So then you cancel all the results, Hare Krishna. You cancel all the results of your Tirtha Yatra. So we're speaking about one of the principal things, of course, is austerity, performing tapasya. So that's performed by going on Banyatra, or like Banyatra means the parikrama of Vrindavan, Trosikosh parikrama of Vrindavan. Many different groups, Gujarati groups, different groups, they go for 1 month, and you live in a very austere condition, and you hear class Bhagavad Pat every day, and evening time, if it's a big group, highly organized, they'll have Leela, Krishna Leela. And then you live in a very austere condition. I've seen, because we've also, ISKCON also has a party that goes, but some Gujarati parties, there's 7,000 people going on Banyatra. 7,000 people moving. And one party had 10,000 people. Of course, they're all businessmen and they're all very intelligent, so they know how to arrange everything. So many bullock carts are there and so many wagons, and so every day, or every 2 days, they go somewhere around the Dwadasavan, you know, 12 forests of Vrindavan. So that's a wonderful, wonderful Banyatra. It's a wonderful thing to do. They have them in Kartik, and they have them from Vajrapad, from Vajramas up through Kartik for 3 or 4 months. Different groups are going. So that's another form of austerity. So this, by going on Tirtha Yatra, you left the Griha, which is the place for sense gratification, but you didn't leave your wife. Your wife is the abode of sense gratification. It's where, so that's why the Shastras say don't stay more than 3 days. We're discussing why does the Shastras say don't stay more than 3 days when you go on Tirtha Yatra. This is not for Brahmacharis and Sannyasis, or, you know, Brahmacharinis or whatever. This is for Grihasthas, because the sages and the rishis who know, who have realized everything, and the Tattvagyanis, they know the nature. That if you stay more than 3 days, you'll say, okay, this place is boring, but my wife is always exciting. You know, whether you're 30, 40, 50, 60, there's Pumsasriya Matuni Bahavamitam. There's always some. So this is, you have to do this work. So as you keep doing this, because mainly this Tirtha Yatra is for the man's benefit. And the wife also, because she's her center of life is the house and the husband, and the family, house and family. The husband is not so much attached to the house. He could care, you know. It's for his wife, so, basically. But wife, he cares a lot for the wife. You know, everything for the wife. So when the wife, by her going on Tirtha Yatra, she gets some detachment from the house. But she ends up coming back to the house. But the man gets detached from the house, and as he gets contact with the holy dham, because the holy dham is Chintamani dham, Brajaraj. This Brajaraj, this is not ordinary dirt. It looks like ordinary dirt. But it is completely conscious. It is chit. It is full of chit shakti. It is conscious. Prabhupada made the analogy. He was preaching in Hyderabad, 1976. He said, what is the difference between, I'm sitting here in Hyderabad and Vrindavan? And the devotees were, wow, this is the material world. This is some material city in Andhra Pradesh, I think. And Vrindavan is the Dham, the holy Dham. Krishna's Leela Dham, Leela Stan. So said, no, no, what's the difference? And so devotees couldn't figure it out. But then Prabhupada said, he took some, because they had some land that was donated there, 600 acres for a farm. So Prabhupada picked up some of the dirt. He said, see this dirt? If I ask something from this dirt, if I make a request, this dirt cannot, you know, fulfill my request. It's just dirt. It's just bhumi. It's just renu or raj or whatever, you know, soil. But if I go to Vrindavan, if I pick up the soil of Vrindavan and I make a request, Krishna, please, I have this request. That soil, that braj will fulfill my desire. My desire will be fulfilled. That's the difference. He said, because this dirt is dead. This is bhumirapanalob. This is prakriti. This is just, it's not conscious. But that dirt, braj is fully conscious. He said, just like if I ask this table, if I say, it's a makeshift table, if I say, table, go get me one watermelon. So, table won't do anything. But if I ask you, or anyone here, because you're conscious, you have consciousness, you're alive, you have consciousness, you have mobility, you have awareness. So if I ask you, please bring me a watermelon, or for Thakurji's seva, yes, surely I'll go for Krishna's seva. So you'll go somewhere and you'll find a watermelon. So you have the power to fulfill my desire because you're conscious. You can fulfill my desire. But an unconscious entity cannot fulfill my desire. So therefore the braj is actually conscious. We have to accept this. This is a statement of Shastra. This is a statement of realized sages and rishis and people that have lived there and had the experience. But we see with our eyes, we see this is dirt, this is brown dirt, that's yellow dirt. But it's something different. So Prabhupada is emphasizing. So what happens is when the husband and wife are going in contact with holy dham, they're paying dandavat pranams, they're rolling in the dust, they're walking in the dust barefoot, you know, with no shoes, doing prakrama, they're getting so much purification. And the husband is also, he's praying, oh Krishna, oh holy dham, oh rishis, please help me, I'm so entangled and shackled and attached to this wife and children and grandchildren and all these things, please free me from all this. I've had enough of this. I've done my duty. My children are married. Everyone's settled up. Wife is fine. Money's in the bank. House is there. Now, but me, everything is okay. Everything is in position. But my heart is, I'm so attached to my wife. I don't know what to do. So please help me. Please give me some vairagya. Please give me some detachment. So he engages in prayer. So gradually, the more he contacts the holy dham, He develops some sankalpa, some resolve within himself. Yes, I must leave this. I must live in the Dham. I must take seriously the spiritual life. So then, that's when many cultivates that and becomes a Dhrita Vrata, very firm vow within himself. Then he tells his wife, he says, actually, I'm thinking I'd take sannyas. And you can stay with my son or however you like, and I'll make all facility for you, but please, don't mind, but I'm being called by God, and I want to reach the highest kingdom. I want to reach the spiritual world. I want to attain mukti in this life, and I have some energy left. I have some strength left still, and I want to use that for perfection, attaining perfection. Because I'm trained like this, and this is the meaning of our religion. This is the meaning of human life. And moreover, please don't lament, and please don't cry, because whatever benefit I attain, you automatically get 50% of that. Shastra, whatever piety, whatever punya, whatever purity, whatever self-realization that the husband gets, the chaste wife, she gets 50% of that. Not that you lose 50, you get your 100, whatever you have, you get. But she, that is duplicated in half and given to the wife. So the other thing is, if you attain mukti, according to Shastra, 11 generations of your parivar, they also get mukti. So it's in the best interest of your wife to encourage you, yes, you take sannyas and do good bhajan. We'll be okay, I'm fine. We have a gopal here in the house, and I'll make my dresses, and I'll do my pujas, and I'll be fine. Of course, the wife can also go to the holy dham. She can go to some ladies' ashram or some widows' ashram. But if they stay together, it's good chance that they'll come back again. That's why the Vedas, they're not a joke. Vedic literature is not a joke, it's a science. Otherwise, why are educated, intelligent Western people all around the world surrendering to the Indian philosophy? 24 years I'm studying these books and serving this philosophy at the mercy of my guru. And it's sound, and it's perfect, and it's logical, and it's reasonable. So they don't say, okay, they don't like people say, oh, Swamiji, the way you're preaching, all the young people are going to take sannyas. We don't say that. There's four varnas, four ashramas. Of course, some, out of every 10,000, maybe one young man may just say, I don't want this situation, and he has some samskaras, kortiyas, or vairagya, so he goes and becomes a rishi. India is full of these rishis and sages and renunciates. A lot of them are bogus, but a lot of them are genuine. So we have to give room for that also. It's not that everybody has to get married. It's not that everybody has, no, it's not like that. There are exceptions, and that's allowed. You see that even a brahmachari, he's living in Gurukul with a guru, and he's being trained in so many, you know, in yajnas and shastra and pujas and all kinds of different things, and even practical things, Jyotish and Ayurveda and Dhanurveda. It's like Arjuna went to study with Dronacharya. Dronacharya was an expert, he was a guru, a vipra, but he taught this in Dhanurveda. But he was a guru, so he studied with him. So now, as the student is studying for some time, then the guru sees the nature of that brahmachari, and then he has, because he's with him from the time 5 years old all the way up to 18. He's with him for 13 years. So he knows him like a father. He's like a father, like a friend, like a best friend. So he says, well, it appears that you have some material inclination. I think this life of Vairagya is not for you. Maybe you should go into the Grihastha Ashram. What do you think? Actually, Gurudev, I'm thinking in my heart of hearts, you're right. You're actually quite right. You know me better than I know myself. Because Guru is a realized soul. He has vision. So what do you advise I do? Okay, then he gives some advice and then adjustment is made. He gives some dakshin, Guru dakshin, and he leaves the Guru and goes on to his next position. He may come back later when he takes vanaprastha or whatever. Of course, he'll always be with Guru. But he has some, sidetrack. He sidetracked for a short time. Some karmas to work out. So this is, I don't know all the different rules of vanaprastha. It's actually, one thing I meant to say, as I said earlier, as brahmachari has particular rules and regulations, if you actually want to enter what you're a grihastha, but you want to enter vanaprastha ashram, then there are also rules. So one of the rules for vanaprastha ashram is celibacy. It's strict celibacy. So there's not much difference between brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyasi. They're all celibate. There's no mixing up. But the difference is that the grihastha has his wife. You know, whereas brahmachari sannyasi doesn't have any wife. So that's if you actually officially want to, okay, I want to be a vanaprastha. So then you can get the shastras, and you'll see that's one for sure rule. And the other is going on Tirtha Yatra, actually living in the van. You can move to the van together. Many people do that. They get a place in Vrindavan and they go there and they live. And then but unfortunately many grihasthas, they go to Vrindavan and they set up another griha. I see by Bankya Vihari temple on the backside on that Chetikar road, there's huge bhavans. You know, Krishna bhavan, this bhavan, you know, huge houses. Look like they're from Greater Kailash or something. And they go and they make another Greater Kailash over there. You know, big house, a big tea, and a big satellite disc on the roof. This is not vanaprastha ashram. They're simply, and they're not really in Vrindavan. They're not in the holy dham. They're what they call on the, they're not really in the spiritual dham. They're on the covering. There's a mayak covering. It's like oil sits on top of the water. So he says, oh, the oil's in the water. Well, the oil's in the water, but the oil's not really part of the water. Because he's keeping a separate program. He's sitting on the water, right? The water's there, but the oil, they don't mix. Oil sits on the top. So when you go to the dham and you bring your satellite disc and your Sony TV and this and that, and you're like oil. The dham is the water flowing and full of rasa. Water means rasa, taste. Madhurya rasa, vatsalya rasa, all kinds of bhavas and rasas are there in the dham. But you're like some oil. You're not mixing, you're not tasting, that rasa. I'm in the dham, I'm in Vrindavan, I'm living in Vrindavan. You're not living in Vrindavan, you're living on Vrindavan. You're the oil on the water. In Vrindavan means you're in the Samudra. It's like someone's on a boat going on the ocean, he says, oh, I'm in the ocean. You're not in the ocean, you're in a boat on the ocean. But somebody's swimming, He's in the ocean. So that's why it's described by the Goswamis, Gopi Bhava Rasam Ritabdi Lahari. Gopi Bhava Rasam Ritabdi Lahari. This means that they were swimming in the waves, Lahari, in the waves of Gopi Bhava. Gopi Bhava Rasam Ritabdi Lahari Kalola Madno Muhur Bande Rupa Sanatana Rubhuyago Sri Jiva Gopalako. Gopi Bhava Ras. And they were tasting this rasa. They were swimming in that ocean of Vrindavan. They were swimming through the waves. Prema Taranga. Prema Taranga means the waves of prema. Gopi Bhava means prema. Pure love for Radha and Krishna. Fully surrendered, fully dedicated, fully absorbed. Dhyan, smaran, sportis. Getting sportis, visions of Nitya Leela, Astakali Leela. This is the Goswamis. That's living in Vrindavan. That's Vrindavan. And so many people are living on Vrindavan. There's a lot of oil there. A lot of oil spills. You know, in the ocean, they say the tankers crash up and they make a spill of oil. Right? The oil spill and it's all floating around and comes on the beach and ruins the whole beach. Well, the thing is that the Shastras explained it in Kali Yuga, because people aren't performing any samskaras. The higher classes of society, the Kshatriyas, the Brahmanas, and even the Vaishyas in some cases, they will perform samskaras, Dasavita samskara. So one samskara, the first samskara, and the most important one, is the first one. It's called Garbhadan samskara, which means the placing of the seed in the womb of the mother. This is conception, husband and wife coming together, producing child. So depending on if they perform the proper jagya, the Garbhadan samskara jagya, then they will attract a very high class, highly developed jiva to enter that womb and develop there. Otherwise, if it's just the ordinary combination of a man and woman, just like a cat and dog and any kind of combination with no samskara, then you get whatever. But generally, you get whatever as a result means kalo shudra sambhava. It's predicted in the age of kalo shudra sambhava. In the age of Kali, shudra sambhava. Everyone has the nature, everyone has the qualification and the nature of shudras. Shudras are lazy, shudras are foolish, shudras are very attached to opposite sex, and they're prone to intoxication and always in illusion. This is shudra. So now you see that this is basically the nature of everyone in Kali Yuga. Even the Brahmins, you know, the head of society, the Brahmins, they're not even doing Garbhadan, not at all. It's written about, it's described. So although the Shastras are meant for all times, of course there are slight modifications according to different ages. And Kali Yuga, still the samskaras should be performed. They should not be abandoned. They are very scientific and very valuable. But people are so lazy, it's too much trouble, this jati samskara, namkarana, this, forget it, upanayanam, it's too much trouble. Why bother? They don't understand the purpose, because the brahmanas are not speaking properly and explaining the purpose and the function of these samskaras and what their effect is and what they do. So people are so scientific and into, as you were saying this morning, modern innovations in computers and technology. So they say, this is all mythology, this, who cares about that? Just get a job, just get an education and get a good job, get a good education, get a good job. That's the difficulty with Kali Yuga, is we're so fallen, we have no good qualities. But still, we can't wholesale abandon the scriptures, because Krishna says in Gita, and this Gita is for all time, for all places, and he says, Yashastra vidim utsrija. Yashastra vidim utsrija. Kartate kamakarata. Nasa sukham avapnoti. Nasidim na prangatim. Nasa siddham prangatim. He says, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Shastra vidim utsrija. Yashastra vidim utsrija. Kartate kamakarata. If people out of lust, kartate kamakarata, karta means act. If people out of lust, just they're so lusty and so much in a sense gratification, if out of lust, yashastra vidim utsrija. If they utsrija means if they reject, if they throw away the shastra, yashastra vidim. The shastra vidhi, it's called shastra vidim, means shastra vidhi. Vidhi means the path of perfection, the path of happiness. Then what does Krishna said? Okay, if you don't want to follow the shastras, you don't want to observe samskaras, even in Kali Yuga, then what will you get? Nasa sukham avapnoti. Nasa sukam avapnoti, yasasiram napuram gatim. He said, you will not get happiness. You will not get real happiness. Nasukam avapnoti, nasasiram puram gatim. And you'll not get perfection, and you'll not attain param gatim. You will not attain the supreme perfection or the supreme place by Kunti Loka. You'll not get mukti. So Krishna's warning in Bhagavad Gita because he knows the nature. He's speaking Bhagavad Gita at the dawning of Kali Yuga. So he's setting that in 18th chapter. It's in 18 at the end. He's saying, oh, by the way, in case you don't believe what I said in Bhagavad Gita, in case you don't want to follow it, because in the 4th chapter he says, Chaturvarnya Maya Shristam. Chaturvarnya Maya Shristam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. He says, in all places, in all times, in the universe, there's Chaturvarnya Maya Shristam. There are 4 varnas and 4 ashramas. They may be perverted, and they may be diluted, but they still exist. There's always a Brahman. There's always an intellectual class. And there's always a Kshatriya class, the warrior class, the army class, the spirited class of person. And then there's always the businessman, the Vaishya. And then there's always the worker, the laborer, the Shudra. You're everywhere in Russia. And Russia tried to do away with the classes. They say, oh, classless society. Everyone's equal. But then they had 2 classes, the workers and the bosses. There was 2 classes in Russia. So even they tried to do away, and then people said, this is foolish. And they threw that away. It went from 1917 to 87 or something like that. It lasted about 70 years. Because it's bogus. It's not real. The real thing is Chaturvarnya Maya Shristam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. According to your quality, your guna, and your actions, you are placed in a particular varna and ashrama. So the shape of those varnas in Kali Yuga has changed, as you said. But they still exist, and they must be observed as much as possible. Otherwise, people, it's all hell for people. So the how to observe, that's why you have Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. There's 2 eyes of a civilized, cultured human being. Shastra Chakshush and Guru Chakshush. He studies Shastra and he understands intellectually with discrimination what is the way to go. And then to keep him on the path because he may go left or right, the other eye is Guru. So there's Guru Chakshu, or Guru Aksha, and Shastra Akshu. So a fortunate person, a very, very fortunate person has Guru, and then of course the Guru teaches him Shastra and then he studies Shastra on his own. Then he has 2 good eyes, 20-20 vision, perfect vision. He can see this is reality, this is illusion. This is permanent. This is temporary. This is valuable. This is worthless. This is meaningful. This is meaningless. This is the real way for happiness. This is Ananda Sukhapat. This is Ananda Pat. This is the path of happiness. This is Dukkapat. This is the path of suffering. Dukkapat, path, you know, the path, pat. So the guru will interpret or explain the shastras according to the age. Because in Satyuga there was also the shastra. But everyone was Paramahamsa. Everyone was pure vegetarian in Satyuga. There was no McDonald's and Wimpy's and Narulas and all these things. No choice, not even opportunity to go non-veg. No one came on the airplane and said, excuse me sir, would you like veg or non-veg? And he said, well, I'm flying next to Swamiji, I'll take veg. He says, what do you want? I said, no thanks, I have my prasadam. So many times I've been on the train or on the plane and people are with me and they say, so I'm sitting there and I don't want to look at the person and make them nervous because I don't want to create difficulty for anyone. So the lady comes around, so she asked me, I said nothing. And then he asked the person, so I don't like look at him, what are you going to say now? Like, what are you going to say now? I just look away like this. And then he says, oh, non-veg. So just by the influence of a devotee's presence, I don't try to lord it over the person or say, hey, what, you know, watch out, what are you going to say? And sometimes they say, you know, non-veg, but you know, usually they say veg. And then I say to them, oh, don't take veg because of me. You know, I tell them, I say, look, it doesn't bother me, you know, do whatever you want. That's your life. And don't feel imposed by me. You know, we're stuck up here together in this bogey. You know, that's our, you know, your bad luck that you're with me. That's your bad luck. But please, you know, please don't let me give you a hard time because, you know, you take what... No, Swamiji, it's okay. I go this way, that way. No problem. But they like very much when I say that. Very much they like. Then we become some good friendship develops in them. So because then when you go on Rajdhani to Calcutta, there's so much time. They're feeding you all the time. Every 5 minutes, And you don't even eat the whole time you go there. I mean, the devotee won't eat anything. It's only 17 hours. They come with this snack and this dinner and this snack and a breakfast thing and nachka or whatever, nacho and this and that. And every minute people are either drinking tea or eating. I just see them eating or chatting. So the guy has about 3 or 4 opportunities just going to Calcutta to have veg or non-veg, you know. So by consulting with Guru, you will, you can't just say, oh, it's very difficult, it's Kali Yuga, and forget it. You know, of course, in Shastra, you'll see in Puranas, it says that in the age of Kali, no one should take sannyas. In the Mahabharata, it's also quoted, it is forbidden in the age of Kali to take sannyas. So, understanding the degraded and fallen nature of people in Kali Yuga, is actually said that one should not take sannyas. Which means the formal ashram of sannyas, which means there's two types of sannyas. There's karma sannyas and there's bhakti sannyas. Our Lord, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appeared in Kali Yuga 500 years ago. So he's in Kali Yuga and he was born in the family of Mishra. He's a Brahmin. He appeared in West Bengal. So he was trained as a Brahmin and he went on to become a scholar and a Sanskrit teacher. He was teaching Naya, logic, and all Vyakaran, grammar. He had many students. And even went to East Bengal to teach over there also. So at the age of 24, he took sannyas. So someone will say, oh, he's against Shastra. He's forbidden. It says it's forbidden in Kali Yuga to take sannyas. But, of course, he's Krishna. He's the incarnation. He's the incarnation of God and Krishna. So he can write the laws or break the laws. But that sannyas is described in the Vedas, it's forbidden, is karma sannyas. Because Shankara also appeared. Shankaracharya is the incarnation of Lord Shiva. That's why he's called Shankara. He also appeared in Kali Yuga. And he also broke the Shastras. Because he was sannyasi. So, but he did not take karma sannyas. It was gyan sannyas. He took sannyas because he was teaching this Mayavadi path, this, you know, Brahman Satya Jagan Mitya, this path that Brahman is truth. He was teaching Brahman. This is the real truth, and trying to bring people back to the Vedas. Because Buddha had brought everyone away from the Vedas. He said, forget the Vedas, just do ahimsa. And then, so people, because on the Vedas, people were misleading, you know, engaging in animal slaughter and all kinds of wrong things by misusing the Vedas. So Shankara came, so he took sannyas, but he took gyan sannyas. Because the karma sannyas means you take sannyas for the purpose of swarga mukti. I'm renouncing his family life because I want to go to Swarga, so I take sannyas. So that's forbidden in Kali Yuga. The Lord Chaitanya, he actually introduced a new feature. Of course, he didn't actually introduce it, but he propagated this conception. Because Vishnu Swami, he was sannyasi, and also Ramanuja Acharya was a sannyasi. And Ramanuja, of course, from Sri Sampradaya, he was also teaching bhakti. He took bhakti sannyas. So Lord Chaitanya, he took bhakti sannyas. The purpose of his sannyas was nothing for himself, nothing selfish, no karma, no mukti, no personal desire, but to give prema, Krishna prema pradayate, to give Krishna to others. So he didn't violate the shastras. The shastras says don't take karma sannyas. So the followers of Lord Chaitanya, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we also take sannyas. My Gurudev was a sannyasi, Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So we've also taken sannyas. So this is not a violation. But if you're going to take sannyas for the selfish purposes, for your own elevation, that's forbidden. So even in Kali Yuga you can take sannyas, if it's for the purpose of prachar and preaching. But if you're not some kind of dynamic, empowered, or inspired person, you're a quiet, meek, humble person. Of course, sannyasi is supposed to be meek and humble. Trinada pi sunichena, sarori vatsahishana. But let me finish. But that means you can still leave the wife and go and live in the holy dham. It's like there's people in Vrindavan, they're 85 years old, they're brahmachari. They're brahmachari. Brahmachari means that they were married before. It's not that they never got married. They were married, but they're not going to take sannyas. But they're not going to be with their wife. But they're celibate, so they wear saffron color, or they wear white dhoti or saffron. And they're brahmacharis. And they just live there and do their bhajan. And they can attain perfection easily. So that, knowing the nature of the individual, the guru will advise. Of course, you'll be inspired. I know some of my godbrothers, they want to just live their life in the holy dham and attain perfection that way. With other ones, they're inspired. They want, oh, I want to help people. I want to, this is kind of a karuna within themselves. From Krishna's viewpoint, everything, as I mentioned this morning, is his lila. So there's Srishti lila. You've heard of Srishti? Srishti means creation.
Yeah.
Srishti. There's Srishti lila, there's Rath lila, there's Julan lila, there's Gocharan lila, many, many lilas of Bhagavan, in many different forms. There's Narahari lila, that's also lila, vanquishing Haranyakashipu, establishing Dharma, yada yada yadamasya glanirbhavibharata. So this creation, this whole material world, this is the lila of Vishnu. This is Vishnu's lila. Because Krishna expands in the Purusha avatars, we were mentioning maybe this morning. There's Karanandakshay Vishnu with Mahavishnu, then there's Garbhadakshay Vishnu, then Kshirodakshay Vishnu, Paramatma, Antaryami. Of course he also has, as the super solar, Antaryami has gone into the heart of every living entity and into every atom. He's also the super soul of each universe. In every material universe there's one Kshirodakshay Loka. There's one place where Kshirodakshay Vishnu was lying on his ocean of milk also. That's why he's called Kshir Sagar. So he's lying there. So the universe has a super soul. This body is like a universe that has a super soul. What we call super soul means Paramatma or Antaryami. Now, Mahavishnu, his consort is Ramadevi. Ramadevi is like Lakshmi and Narayan. So Ramadevi is the consort, Ramadevi. So it's described that he's engaged in a pastime, it's called Yoga Nidra. And he's sleeping on Anantashesh. Anantashesh is an expansion of Krishna from Balaram to Anantashesh. Giant, you can say like cobra type, like a cobra, like sarp. So he is relaxing there, he's just sleeping. And as he's sleeping, he's exhaling and inhaling. Vechaka and Purvaka, I think it's Vechaka and Purvaka in Pranayama. Vechak and Purva. So when he exhales, what comes out of his breath is so many universes. So many entire universes come out of his breath. When we exhale, just some, you know, bad gas comes out, or some bad air or something. But when Mahavishnu is exhaling, so he's dreaming. So this whole material creation, all the different universes, there are millions of universes emanating from his body. Then he expands himself into each single universe as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. And then there's the whole creation, and Brahma comes from Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and within that one universe so many planets were created and everything. So this whole material creation is the lila of Mahavishnu. And it's all going on, it says Yoga Nidra. Sometimes the scriptures describe while he's sleeping, Nidra means sleeping. While he's sleeping, the material creation is being expanded as he exhales. And when he inhales, it all goes within his body, the entire material creation. That period of exhalation is like millions and billions and billions of years. It's a fantastic amount of time. And although he's appearing to be sleeping, the acharyas actually say that he's engaging in pastimes with Ramadevi. But his abode, or his lila, his personal lila with his consort, is covered by Yogamaya. So when anyone perceives or sees Mahavishnu or Karanadakshay Vishnu, they just see he's sleeping and Ramadevi is massaging his feet. She's rubbing his feet, Charan Seva. And then he's exhaling, all these universes are coming out. So that's his pastime, that's the material energy. That's how the material energy is going on. Through these, material energy is also part of Krishna's pastime. He expands himself to create this energy, what we call material. Ultimately, in one sense, there's no such thing as material. Material means forgetfulness of God. Because it's all part of Krishna. Krishna says, maya tatam idam sarvam. He says, everything is within me and I am within everything. Everything. The material energy, the spiritual energy, is all within him. And he's within everything. So what happens, the only thing that really exists that separates us from this understanding is illusion. Of course, there's the nature of the material energy. It has a different nature than spiritual energy. Material energy disintegrates. It goes through six changes. There's six changes for everything material. it's produced, then it, at least living thing, it's produced, then it grows for some time, and it's maintained, produces some byproducts, it dwindles, and then it vanishes. And practically, you can even, these are the six changes of living entities, trees, animals, birds, everything goes through these six changes. So almost you can even explain that about, you know, non-living things, like institutions or something. And the business was created, and the business was maintained, and the business produced some byproducts. Then the business dwindled, or what was it? I forget the sixth one. You can almost apply it to some institution also. It goes through six changes. Then it vanishes. You know, if you die or the business is closed. So everything in its material world is going through these six changes. So this is the nature of this energy. But when you enter the spiritual energy or take part there, there's no birth, there's no death, there's no disease, there's no old age, there's no deterioration. There's nothing broken. Your body doesn't get old, you don't get deteriorated. Navayovanam. You have an eternal spiritual form. That's Nitya Dham, spiritual Dham. So these are two different categories of energy of the Lord. But he's created it all, so it's all within him, as he says in Bhagavad Gita. Mayatamidam sarvam jagat avyaktamurtina. Jagat avyaktamurtina. Jagat avyaktamurtina means, avyakta means manifest, present, and jagat means universe, and murti means my form. I'm within everything, he says. You know this verse, ninth chapter, verse 4, Bhagavad Gita. She knows some chapters of Bhagavad Gita by heart.
By heart, you know.
So it exists, and you know, for Vishnu it's a dream, and also for us it's a dream. Prabhupada often uses this analogy, that when you're sleeping, you go to sleep, and you say, oh, I was, you know, and then you, and in your dream, you're in Rajasthan, and you're a king, and you have a big palace, and you have so many elephants, you're riding on elephants, and there's so many things going on. Then you wake up, oh, Delhi, wow, I have to take the bus to work. No elephants. I don't have any elephants. Where's my palace? I live in this little apartment that I rent over here. And, you know, in east of Kailash. Anyway, I was just dreaming. That was just illusion. So you wake up, and so this is my reality, my job, my family, my work. This is reality. The Prophet said, no, this is also illusion. Because at night, you think this is reality, your wife, your family, your business, your establishment, your progress, your profit, your loss, everything, your investments, your capital gains, your this, that. And then you take rest, you forget all about it. When you're sleeping, you forget everything. You forget your wife, you know, you're even with somebody, you know, with some other girl in your dreams. Your wife's lying next to you and you're with your old girlfriend or something or whatever. You know, and you, of course you don't tell your wife about that dream. But, you know, or boyfriend or whatever. So, you know, whatever. India's a little more cultured than that, but anyway. So you dream something, and you forget all about this reality, and then you wake up and you say, oh, that was a silly dream, what an illusion. And then you identify with this, and you forget all about the dream. You forget that, oh, that was illusion. But when you were sleeping, it was very real. You really identified with it. You identified so much with it that, you know, you were in your dream and you were fighting in your dream, and you woke up and you were sweating. Because your heart went faster, you started perspiring, your sheets are all wet, or you're in your dream, and some tiger, some guy is coming to catch you, and you go, and you start screaming, and your wife says, what's wrong? Oh, I was dreaming. But it wasn't like, it's not you, you very much identified with it, and you had experiences with it. It's like sometimes a man, he's dreaming a bad dream, an illicit dream, he has night pollution, loses semen. So that's so-called illusory world of a dream, it's having its effect on the body, a real effect. So then when we wake up, we say, oh, that was illusion, that was a dream. And we forget about it. But so, in the night, we forget about this day. So Prabhupada said, this day activity, all of our running around, all of our possessions, that's a daydream. This is a daydream. And that is a night dream. The only difference between these two dreams is that the daydream lasts longer. The daydream is a longer lasting illusion because you daydream for 18 hours and you night dream for 6. You know, 6 hours swapna or vishram. So I say, but during those 6 hours, oh, it's very real, you know, the 6 hours, and the psychologists, they put electrodes on the brain and they measure, and they know when you're in certain dreams, and they wake you up, oh, what do you think? Oh, I'm dreaming this, and they let you sleep. They can monitor your brain waves, and they know that when you're in this certain brain, pattern of brain waves, now you're dreaming, and then they've done studies. So sometimes they say that within a period of 5 minutes you can have six different dreams. You're in a dream and you think it's so long and so many things are happening, and that so you go to sleep and then the waves are going like that, so they're watching the meter and they're saying, oh, he's dreaming, it's a heavy dream. So they let it go for about 5 minutes, then they wake the person up. He's sleeping 5 minutes and you say, what happened? Oh, I had this huge dream, I was dreaming for hours, I did this thing and that thing and this thing and that thing, oh, I was doing so many things. Really? You were only asleep for 5 minutes. So they say that dreams usually last for about 5 minutes, and you have many of them. And they've done so much research, so you think it's very real. So this is a daydream and a night dream. This is all illusion. This is, we're dreaming, and this whole material world, Mahavishnu is dreaming. He's just sleeping, and he's just exhaling, he's sleeping, and this is coming out, and it's all just illusion. It's all the illusory energy, Maya Jagat. But we're stuck in here, and we're covered by that illusion. We think, oh, this daydream is very real. And we really get into it, we get absorbed in it, and we sweat and we perspire and we have, different experiences. And it's very real. And you go to sleep, where's the reality? It's all forgotten. Totally forgotten. So if it's forgotten, that means it has no permanent basis. It is illusion. Illusion means that which is temporary. The daydream is temporary, the night dream is temporary, they're both illusion. One's 18 hours illusion, one's 6 hours illusion, you add them together, you have 24 hours illusion. Sabdin moha. A whole day are in illusion. So then Tamasi Mam Jyotirgama. Coming to the light means to realize, oh, wait a minute, I want to get out of this illusion. I want to wake up. That's why they say Jeev Jago. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. Wake up, Jiva.